Now, how did your family end up in Africa? Because you grew up in Nairobi.
Yeah, yeah. My dad's father was actually in the British military, so he got posted to different countries in Africa, and my father was mainly brought up in Eritrea, but also in Kenya.
Wow. This must have been the most wonderful place to grow up as well. It would have been such an interesting place to grow up. What kind of experiences stood out for you as a child?
I guess as a child, I got to fly with my father to remote places in his light aircraft.
Oh, wow.
So I got to see firsthand how traditional tribal communities lived, and it created a natural curiosity in me and respect for different cultures.
Wow. And what an incredible way to see the world too, from a bird's eye view almost.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you get to see all of these different cultures. You get to see all these different places within Africa. It would have been amazing to have exposed yourself and to expose your kids to that, I guess, from your father's point of view as well.
Yeah, it was a very free childhood. I mean, it was mainly Kenya and, you know, just having access to wildlife, you know, pretty much on your doorstep and stuff. Wow. It was beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, then you went to university, you did a fine arts degree.
Yeah.
You studied kind of drawing and the fine arts side of things. How did you come to land on photography? How did photography become your kind of weapon of choice, if you will?
Well, I was very creative at school, so always very good at art, but I never actually thought about photography at that stage. It wasn't huge in my life, but I was influenced by a photographer called Peter Beard. He did a lot of black and white photography in Kenya, and I was exposed to that, and I loved his work. But when I went to university, that was when I really turned into photography, because I did a fine arts degree, and I was drawing. You had to draw for a whole year. Literally.
Wow.
It was a very classical way of being taught.
Very sore hands by the end,
yeah,
too, I'm
but
sure.
It got you to see light and dark and texture. It really trained the eye.
Okay.
And then from there, I chose to go into photography, mainly because I thought I could earn a living from it, because going into painting, and you have to be extremely extraordinary.
You are extremely extraordinary in your photography, by the way. You are the most incredible. I have been sitting in the studio with the production team this morning, just oogling over your entire Instagram feed. It's amazing.
Thank you.
What made you decide to go back to Africa? What made you decide to use kind of the traditional tribe and traditional cultures as a huge motif for your work?
I guess with the influence of having had a lot of traditional culture in my upbringing, I just really enjoy discovering and traveling and adventuring, and I love remote places, and the subject matter was extraordinary to me. I mean, I love the jewelry the women wear. I love the cult, you know, the community spirit of different traditional communities, and
I think you've got quite a unique perspective as well, having grown up around traditional communities and having been around them kind of your whole life. I think the way you're able to capture them from that respect is quite interesting. And it obviously comes through, I think, in your photographs, because it's almost an intimacy between the subject and the camera.
Well, do you know what I think it is as well is to immerse yourself in the story, because everyone has their own story, but to actually take photos and immerse yourself in the community. Oh, sorry, the community and the story enhances your photography.
Absolutely.
So I feel that I really kind of connect with the people that I'm photographing, and that brings out something magical within the photos.
Absolutely. I love any of the photos that you've shown with children in them. There's some beautiful photos with little babies and little children and some young people as well. And I think that is obviously a sense of connection there, because children don't lie through their faces. They cannot hide secrets. They if they're comfortable with you can see it. If they're not, you can see it. they're not very subtle people, children. So I think that really comes across in a lot of those photos, and they're gorgeous. They're stunning, stunning photos. Putting together this exhibition, Moja Africa, what was behind that decision? What kind of inspired you to bring that exhibition? What inspired you when you were putting it together as well?
Well, I guess the exhibition is more a celebration of female empowerment and adornment of self-expression. A lot of the they're oversized African tribal portraits, and they just show these women with their jewelry, and they're proud and they're beautiful. And yeah. I, you know, so much of Africa is given a poor, there's negative
connotations.
Media connotations, yeah. And I just wanted to, I guess, show how beautiful Absolutely. African people are. And there's a lot of these areas that I went into, they're very remote, and a lot of the traditions are, you know, they're still there, but also with progress, a lot of the traditions get diluted. And so I want to preserve that in my photography.
I think that that's absolutely wonderful that you're trying to preserve that traditionalism, that culture that is getting lost and inevitably will be changed by modernity and modernism. How do you think ancestral African tribes are kind of adapting to the encroaching modern world? You said that they adapt a lot. Is that kind of the general vibe that you're feeling when you go into these communities?
Well, it's an interesting question, because we could have a long debate about the modern world encroaching on tribal traditional ways of life. But in some ways, many of the communities go with the flow of progress.
Okay.
So with progress brings change, and it can have positive and negative effects. But in some ways it is good, because you get medical help Absolutely. In these remote places. You can, you know, education can help prevent less female genital mutilation, that kind of stuff. Wells can be built. So some tribes are even using tourism to bring in money for them.
Wow.
But then, yeah, but you have then the negative side effect of this, where you've got, you know, traditional attire then gets replaced by modern clothing, and certain traditions which have been around for centuries get diluted. And you know, even worse, say one of the negative aspects that I found when I was photographing tribal groups in Ethiopia is the men are all carrying AK-47s instead of bows and arrows.
Yeah, instead I saw some of those images that you posted.
And that's because of the conflict in Sudan. So because of the conflict in Sudan, there's more easy access to guns and stuff, and so instead of warding off wildlife with bows and arrows like they used to, or we call them shifter, they're people who steal cattle stealers.
Okay.
They're called shifter.
All right.
And they chase them away with AK-47s instead of,
oh my gosh,
you know, bows and arrows.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, so it's kind of like in these remote places, it's quite scary going to photograph these villages, because
Absolutely.
Everyone's, you know, carrying guns now, which is a bit strange.
Jarring. Yeah. I can imagine it would be very, very jarring. Now, a percentage of sales from your work goes towards women suffering from obstetric fistula, and that's something that's going to be included in this exhibition, which I think is fantastic. You were speaking there about modern medicine helping a lot of rural communities, of remote communities as well. What was behind that decision?
It's very close to my heart. I've, you know, a lot of women in underdeveloped countries, unfortunately, suffer from fistula, and it's eradicated in the Western world. So what it is when women are carrying a child and they're ready for birth, the child, there's a, maybe it's the baby's obstructed, it can't come out, and they need a midwife or medical facilities to help with the birth. But in these remote areas, they don't have access to that. And so the woman goes through labor for days and days and days.
Oh my gosh.
And during this time, a hole between the vagina and rectum or bladder is caused by the prolonged obstructive labor, leaving the woman incontinent.
Gosh.
And so the baby ends up dying, unfortunately.
Wow.
And the woman, not only is she grief-stricken, but she's got, you know, urine. She's incontinent.
It would be horrific.
It's horrendous. And when this happens, she usually gets outcast from her village. Yeah, it's horrendous.
Wow.
And so she ends up, you know, just having to beg on the street and stuff. It's really awful. And a tiny little operation, which might cost like $50, can fix this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing that then we're taking, I guess it's almost giving back to the communities. You're going in there and taking photographs and preserving this culture, taking it here to Australia and all around the world, and then giving back in terms of medical supplies or in terms of these fistulas and having them fixed. I think that this is, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous to then turn something around like that as
yes,
well.
Yes, and it empowers women again.
Absolutely. So, this whole women empowerment, regal jewellery, beautiful. I'm so on board. The exhibition, it opens on the 23rd of November. We'll pop a bunch of details on the podcast at the end of the show. Louisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I could sit here and talk to you all day. Thank you so much for joining us.